The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior. Sun Warrior is a premium, all-natural, raw superfood company dedicated to providing the best vegan, plant-based protein powders and supplements. Go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all of their products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. Enviromedica, makers of Terra Flora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic formulated with a combination of spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Wild Foods, small batch superfoods from around the world. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Wild Foods was founded out of an obsession with finding the best ingredients in the world to support health and longevity. Paleo Magazine, the well-being journal and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off all their products and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio. Baby, do you want to go higher, baby? You're in the right place. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Aviana Barrientos. We've got, Ash.
Alicia.
Alicia. Oh my gosh. I'm too relaxed this morning. I am. If that's such a thing, and my brain's a little
loosey goosey.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. But it's always great to have Alicia's on the controls now. And we've got Von England in studio with us. And
hey.
Alicia, you couldn't hear the conversation that we were having before we went live, I don't think. But so Von England, you know, he's been on the show for a long time. We're gonna be talking about, can men and women just be friends?
Interesting.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, I want to say yes, but I want to wait for the professional to tell me.
The professional. Yes. Well, we'll see what kind of, you know, feedback we have. So,
well, you know, yeah, there's, it's so interesting. So this is it's an age old question. I think that so many people think, oh no, you can, or yes, you can, and Avi and I were just saying that, like, my closest friends are probably the. It depends upon what the, like, I had a love question, okay, yesterday.
A love question.
Okay. A relationship question. And I called one of my dear friends last night to get her advice because she gives great love relationship advice.
Okay.
And you know, I even though people think like I've dated a lot, I really haven't, you know. I find someone that I really care and love and I enter into deep relationships. I'm not one to just go around dating.
Okay.
You know?
All right. So you stay pretty loyal is what I hear you saying.
I'm very loyal.
Okay.
I'm loyal to a fault almost.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I am. And I think it's from being raised Italian.
That's a cultural
thing.
I do think there is a cultural component to, you know, loyalty. I think every culture is a little bit different, but Italian, you know, you guys are pretty loyal. I mean,
we are.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you get killed.
That's the mafia. So.
I'm sort of joking, but you know, loyalty is a very important attribute or characteristics. What characteristic?
I agree.
Character.
What
am I saying?
Characteristic.
You got it.
No,
yeah,
you're right. You're right. So, like, a lot of times when I do polls, whenever I'm talking to some of my couples, I say, hey, what are your values? Because, again, once you establish your values, then it's easier to make decisions. And by and large, a lot of times people say, hey, what are your values? They say, you know what? I want someone I can trust. And a part of that is loyalty. And loyalty and commitment are one of the two biggest things you have to have in a relationship to make it successful. Now, I'm talking about any relationship, not just a companion, but friendship, because I've had a lot of people who've had friends and close associates and family members betray them, and they're not loyal, you know.
Yeah.
It sucks whenever you get betrayed. So, but especially when people are disloyal, those kind
yeah.
of deal.
So, yeah, no, being betrayed is a terrible feeling.
I just
really
had a trigger come up when I said that. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. And how did that make you feel?
How did it, you know, you, well, Yeah, I felt betrayed. I felt angry. I felt sad. I felt hurt. That's one of the biggest things, you know, because whenever you expect someone to be there for you and they disappoint you in such a way that is beyond something that you even fathom, sometimes like that can, I mean, it's like you grieve the relationship in a sense. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah. Anyways, though.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to talk about it. I mean, we're going to talk about the challenges of it and what are the truths.
It's a good topic.
It's a great topic. It really is. And you and your wife went to the doctor this morning to check on.
Yeah.
You're having a baby.
Yeah, you're having a baby. And little Kenlin's doing okay. So.
And so how old is he right now?
He is 5 and a half, 6 months.
He's so, 6 months in the womb.
So, yeah.
He has not sprung. He has not sprung
That's
yet.
That's a good thing. Yes.
Man. Are you nervous?
I talk to a lot of guys about how they deal with, you know, being with a pregnant woman, and every guy's experience is different. Every woman's pregnancy is different. That's what I'm finding out. But then we find so many, like the estrogen and the progesterone, what you women go through. I have a totally new appreciation for what you guys experience. And, you know, I'll just say it like this, is that there are challenges that you can only experience whenever you're going through it. So at least that's been my opinion about it. So.
Yeah. Well, and look how many women have to go through it without a husband that maybe get pregnant out of wedlock.
Yeah.
You know, it's really difficult. It's a scary thing. It shouldn't be. But I really feel like the medical field, sorry, medical people out there, but I feel like they've taken it from something that should be so natural into like, I don't know, into the extreme. And especially if you're over 35, like your wife is, oh, Lord Jesus, they don't stop with the fear mongering, I swear.
So check this out, Bernadette. I was filling out paperwork earlier today, and it said, hey, what is the biological husband's information? So I fill in, you know, okay, I'm biological husband or biological father. I flip it over, and it said, what is the presumed father's information? Like, if this is not your married husband, what is it? I was like, man, they got a lot of cheating people out here, man.
So,
just like, and like the guy may never know. He's like, oh yeah, we're married, but it belongs to this other dude. So I was like, man, this is crazy. But this is basic intake paperwork.
This a side note. I heard a random crazy story of a girl who was in Europe for a trip.
Oh,
and
I know this story.
What?
She came back and she's pregnant. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
It happens.
Yeah. And the father may never know.
Before you slip it in.
He may never know.
He probably
will never know.
Wow.
Well,
I mean, you can't count. I mean, with social media and stuff like that nowadays,
maybe.
Like, when I was in Italy, my driver, like, we're friends on social media now, you know. But,
how nice.
You know, so like the
aren't
guy.
Italian people so wonderful?
They are. He's
Well, so, they were in Spain, so.
Yeah. Well,
Spain.
I was in Barcelona, too. I know a few people in Barcelona. Yeah, so maybe she can connect with them, but yeah, that kind of sucks.
It's crazy.
Especially if she was with more than one guy, you know, so I don't know, so.
Who knows?
We'll figure that out. Well, she will, hopefully.
Man. I don't know.
That would be a dilemma.
Man.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do? Woo. Yeah. Yeah. What is she going to do? Does anybody know?
I mean, she's having the baby.
She's having the baby
by herself. By herself. I mean, her family's supportive. Like her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but,
you know. She's got a good family. That helps. Yeah.
But
she's
doing it solo.
I feel like a migraine is coming out thinking about that. Oh, my gosh. Is Navi on the line? Because we were going to do the spiritual daily. But, you know, I was reading, as I always am, this book this morning, The Biology of Belief. Look at this. I just ordered my third copy. I don't know what it is about this book.
The Biology of Belief.
The Biology of Belief. And it's about unleashing the power of consciousness, matter, and miracles. Miracles. And it's just interesting. It's about quantum, you know, physics and all that. But Charlie has chewed up two of these books now. This is the second one. The other day I went inside the house for just a minute, you know, and I left it out on my little area with my phone and my tea or coffee, whatever I was drinking. And I came back and he had chewed the hell out of it.
Apparently he doesn't want you to read this book. So.
He doesn't. So I ordered another one. Okay. Cause I'm real funny about stuff being all boogered up, you know, when it's all tore up, I can't visually messes with me. Like
can't
I can't
it.
Hold this book. I'll recycle it, whatever. It's just all jacked up. But I was interestingly enough, reading this about placebos and the belief effect that every medical student learns, at least in passing, that the mind can affect the body. They learn that some people get better when they believe falsely or that they are getting medicine. When patients get better by ingesting a sugar pill, medicine defines it as a placebo effect. But my friend Rob Williams, I'm still reading here, not my friend, but I'm reading from the book. Okay. Rob Williams, founder of PsychK, an energy-based psychological treatment system, suggests that it would be more appropriate to refer to it as a perception effect. And I call the belief effect to stress that our perceptions, whether they are accurate or inaccurate, actually impact our behavior and our bodies. Don't you find that so interesting as someone who, you know, that's what you do. I mean, you're a licensed professional counselor.
Yeah.
And, you know, your PhD is focused on couples relationships dialogue. But, you know, medically speaking, I think that's so intriguing.
I do believe your thoughts influence a lot of what goes on inside of your body. Whenever you look at different cultures, different religions about, like, you know, the Buddhists believe, like, you may have a certain frequency. And let's say, for instance, you date the same person because you tend to attract the same frequency all the time. So I'll say it like this. Like, if someone is getting angry, their body may release adrenaline. Okay, that adrenaline is going to affect the body a certain way. If they feel stressed, let's say they have a thought and that makes them feel sad or they feel depressed, then the body's going to release a stress hormone, cortisol. Mm-hmm. If they feel happy, the body's going to release dopamine. Right. So the body has a physiological response to the thoughts that you're having in your mind because those thoughts will lead to certain feelings. Mm-hmm. And then those feelings you'll have a physiological response inside of your body. Now, again, that's just a little bit of the science behind it. But a lot of times people talk about, you know, what you think about, you'll attract to mm-hmm. you. And I do think there's a lot to that. And if you think you're getting better, a lot of times your body's going to respond in a
Absolutely.
More positive way. Like people who have cancer, a lot of times when they have positive thoughts, they're more likely to recover from the cancer
Absolutely.
Than when they have these nihilistic, pessimistic thoughts that, and you know what, I'm going to die. So.
Yeah. So eat well. Think I wrote this down when I was thinking about all this. You know, I'm sure somebody else has already said this, but I was thinking to myself, eat well, think well, be well.
That's good.
You know, but we've got a great show coming up. We've got Dr. Jonathan Avery as well. He is the Director of Addiction Psychiatry and Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at the Weill Cornell Medical College in New York at New York Presbyterian Hospital. We're going to be talking about addiction. We're going to do a Q&A with him. And, of course, Von Eagland, can men and women just be friends? Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Aviana Barrientos, Von Eaglin, and I've got Dr. Jonathan Avery on the line. He is the Director of Addiction Psychiatry and an Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at Weill Cornell Medical College and New York Presbyterian Hospital. In addition to his clinical work, Dr. Avery teaches addiction psychiatry to the Weill Cornell medical students and residents of New York Presbyterian Hospital. He is the founder of Addiction Stigma Institute, and he was on the editorial board for the DSM-5, that is the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders, a clinical cases book, and he has won numerous awards for his clinical and academic work, and he has a heart of gold. That's my contribution to his bio. You can find him at substanceusestigma.com. Always a pleasure. How are you doing today, Dr. Avery?
Very good. Always a pleasure to be with you all. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. I just always love your content. I do. And what we're talking about today is so important. There are so many people all over this country, all over the world that suffer with addiction for a variety of reasons. But how many people in the U.S. suffer from opioid addiction?
Well, more than I even care to report. I mean, it's the numbers. We keep thinking they'll be better, but they turn out not to be. And so what we often think about first are the deaths, and we're still seeing, you know, 130 plus people dying a day from opioid-related drug overdoses.
Wow.
You know, tens of thousands a year that adds up to. And even in the last year, we think maybe there are 2 million new people misusing prescription opiates.
Wow.
Maybe more than 10 million people in the last year that are misusing opiates. And just as we're hoping these numbers improve with time, that, you know, we'll... the opiate epidemic will be behind us, but we're still all, you know, suffering from it in our communities and in our homes.
Well, and it touches everyone. I mean, it's rich people get addicted to opioids is what I'm trying to say. Poor people do, young people, older people. It affects everyone, doesn't it?
That's right. No one's immune. And
right.
sort of the scary turn as well is that these days we're seeing that people even looking to avoid opiates. So those opiates that I was talking about, the prescription opiates or heroin, you know, sort of the opiates that you might know about. Mm-hmm. You know, people are a little scared these days, so are trying to avoid them. And what we're seeing is that synthetic opiates like fentanyl are even being pressed into other drugs. So drugs like cocaine, pills marked as Xanax, and other pills on the street. And so, you know, there are certainly people that are seeking out opiates, but then there are people being impacted even trying to avoid opiates. And so it really feels like it's everywhere from an addiction perspective mm-hmm. these days.
Well, you know, a lot of people that I just was recently at the Texas Hemp Convention here. And so I'm bringing this up because so many people say that CBD oil is a great alternative method, not only for addiction, but also for opioid addiction. What do you think about that as a medical doctor?
We're looking everywhere, and including in the role that CBD might play in terms of one being alternative for opiates for people that are using it for pain or anxiety or depression.
Mm-hmm.
And two, there's some, especially animal models, that show that it may be a promising treatment down the line for opiate use disorder. And so, you know, it's definitely the thing about marijuana, CBD, you can't overdose on it, right? Like
right.
you can on opiates. And so in that way, just to start, it's much safer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, speaking of pets, my dog Charlie has separation anxiety, and you're like, why is she bringing this up? But it's a great story because so I got at the hemp convention. What was the name of that company? I think it's called Pet Help. Anyway, I've been giving him the treats, and then last night I gave him the oil, and he, you know, he gets in his cage, and usually he's like he'll cry for like an hour, and it's very difficult to find, you know, to get to bed and get him rested and just calm the whole house down. Last night I gave him the liquid, and I have to tell you, Dr. Avery, within just a couple of minutes he was calm. He was calm within like, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes, and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I wish all dogs could have access to the CBD oil, because and people too, because I really do feel like it's very healing for so many people, and it works, you know.
Sure. No, we need to do better overall in terms of how we address opiates, how we address people's anxiety and depression. And, you know, I think there CBD is one potential option, and there's, you know, different therapies and different treatments as well that are out there. And I think what happens is that people, you know, once you get stuck with opiates, it's hard to try other things.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's the answer to every question. And we're just encouraging people that there are a lot of answers out there, and one doesn't have to feel alone and isolated. And
yeah,
let's try some other things to get out from behind this.
I would imagine it would be very scary to be addicted to opioids. And actually, it hits close to home because I have someone that I just found out that I'm very close to has an opioid addiction. And it's not, you know, it's you know, she's a mom, and you would never expect it. But having multiple surgeries, you know, for this or that, she got addicted to them, and now she's you know, not doing well. She's really not doing well. But you know, how have rates of opioid misuse among teenagers in the U.S. changed over time?
That's sort of the one promising data that we've seen recently, is that adolescents seem to be using less. I mean, that being said, the group of late adolescents to the early 20s still make up a bulk of people misusing substances. But we've started to see a decline, fortunately, in adolescents starting to use it. And part of that is that you know, perceived harm of opiates has gone up. The sort of pill parties I was hearing about 5 years ago are a little less common, and so we hope those numbers keep going down.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the scary thing is, and I just saw a young adolescent that was like, that came to our hospital and said, you know, I was totally looking to avoid opiates, but it turned out opiates had contaminated, you know, a Xanax pill he had gotten from a friend. And so, you know, it's,
wow.
I think people are trying to be more careful, trying to avoid it. But even then, you know, sometimes you can run across it if you're experimenting. And so
mm-hmm.
Still, even though some good news, we're encouraging everyone to stay vigilant.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the risk factors for addiction?
Right. I mean, if you think about what the risk factors are, if you go to your doctor and break your ankle and you're prescribed an opiate, what the risk factors of being stuck on it in that setting are, it's the things you might expect. It's having a history of trauma being sort of what we call sort of the hidden epidemic in addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rare that I see someone with chronic pain and opiates who hasn't had different degrees of trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So trauma, mental health issues, certainly a family history of substance use if you've had an addiction in your parents or other members of the family. Being younger puts you more at risk. And then it seems like nicotine use might actually be among the substances sort of more a gateway drug than marijuana or anything else that might prime the receptors in a different way.
Well, how does addiction lead to other mental health disorders?
We're always trying to tease it apart when I meet someone, because it's always unclear what started first, either the mental health issues or the addiction, and and often they emerge at similar times in a person's developmental trajectory. But we think a lot about the self-medication hypothesis of addiction, where people are struggling and they use substances to cope. But equally, especially once you start using a substance every day, it does, once you get into daily use of anything, it does seem to, either due to subtle withdrawal states or intoxication states, it seems to increase your rates of developing new depressive and anxiety disorders.
Wow. And so I know there's some new studies. So what do these new studies tell us about treating addiction?
So the big thing we're looking at these days is really increasing, and our hope is that we increase access to addiction treatment. And so everyone's really thinking about ways to get people connected with addiction treatment in easier manners. And so that looks like a lot of things. It looks like telemedicine, where you can sort of get, it's really hard to get someone to go see an addiction provider. And so I think people are using technology where you can sort of connect with an addiction person by your phone or with an app, or become aware of the options using technology, and also they're sort of working on like mobile delivery systems of addiction treatment. San Francisco is a great example where they have these sort of mobile vans with addiction providers that go around and try to meet people where they're at. So I think we're trying to get the treatment and get addiction treatment to people wherever they are, so they don't feel like they have to go somewhere and it's necessarily burdensome. Mm-hmm. And then the treatments for opioid use disorder that were especially touting these days are medications, and there's some medications that can help you get off opiates or help you use them, and sort of the Suboxone, the methadones, the Vivitrols of the world are what we're using for there, and basically they help stabilize the opiate system so that a person can regain function.
And you can, and I know people that have recovered from opioid addiction, and so you can win this battle, can't you?
That's right. I want people to be hopeful. And I think it's sometimes lost that there are more people in recovery in the United States than with active substance use disorders. People can get better. To read a newspaper is to think that no one ever gets better, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, and even in our own families, right, when someone's in recovery, we tend to forget about it. And we don't carry those narratives of hope around with us. And so for anyone listening struggling, or with a family member struggling, keeping that hope is very important, because it is really possible to turn things around and get things on a better track.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was having a conversation with a friend of mine last night, and we were talking about this type of conversation, not specifically opioid addiction, but how the country is so unwell right now. And I believe that even with the opioid addiction, or just addiction in general, part of it is what we're feeding our body. I think that the standard American diet has made Americans weak, both physically and mentally, and they're not as strong as they once were from just the food that we consume in this country.
Right. And we try, it's very hard to give someone a recommendation to exercise more and eat better, because they're always like, oh, come on, doc, I know. Mm-hmm. But it's true. I mean, it's so hard in our society to eat well, right? I mean, it's the easiest, sometimes least expensive foods are the ones that are doing the most damage. And so, it's hard to heal oneself without, being mindful about everything that one's putting in your body, as you're saying.
Yeah. Any final thoughts for our listeners, Dr. Avery?
I liked your question about being mindful that people can recover and to have hope. And I think that's the angle we should all be taking, not to punish people for addiction, not to stigmatize it, but really to view it as something that, like any health condition, has some answers out there and has some solutions that can really help people.
I'm thinking of a famous quote by a golfer, a really famous golfer, but I can't think of who it is. But he said, the five most powerful words, or maybe it's six, something like that. I actually have it in my kitchen, but it's stuck to behind like my pantry door. I haven't taken it down for years, but it says, never, ever, ever, ever give up, something like that. And it's by a famous, everyone would know his name if I could pull it out of my rear end here. But never give up, right, Dr. Avery?
That's right.
All right. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Everyone, you can check Dr. Jonathan Avery out at substanceusestigma.com. That's substanceusestigma.com. Stay tuned. We've got Von Eaglin coming up. Can men and women just be friends? I don't know. We'll find out. Stay tuned. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Aviana Barrientos, and I've got Von Eaglin in studio, and we're talking about can men and women just be friends. Von Eaglin is a licensed professional counselor supervisor and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. He is a certified couple relationship trainer and sees a wide range of clients addressing men's issues, anger management, abuse, and addiction, just to name a few. He is also a doctoral candidate at the University of North Texas in the Counseling and Higher Education Department. His PhD research focuses on couples, relationships, dialogue, and you can find him at Preston Place Counseling. Or follow him on Instagram at Von Talks. Okay, this is a hot topic, and I'm bringing everyone in on this. So can men and women just be friends?
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I say yes.
Some
of my best friends are guys. Yes.
Really? So you've always had like strong male friendships throughout
always.
Your life?
But here's what I think is the caveat as to why, okay?
Okay.
It's because I had a very good relationship with my father and my brothers.
Okay.
And so I think that's where it starts.
So having a good relationship, that helped you understand what boundaries look like? Is that what you're saying? Or
I like male energy.
Okay.
You know, when I was a kid, I would much rather hang out with my dad all day long and go, you know, we'd go to Flickinger's. That was the name of the place where
Flickinger's
was a place where we used to go and get the supplies for the grocery store.
Gotcha.
And I hung out with my dad like all day long. And you know, and the grocery store was right next door to our home. So, you know, I had a really close relationship with my dad. And I can remember being up in the window in my bedroom, and he would go out on the front porch of the grocery store and blow me a kiss and wave goodnight to us every night.
He sounded like a really
He was a great dad. And so I'm very lucky.
He also sounds like he has a lot of empathy. Is that
Where do you think I get it from? He's such a soft. He was. God bless his soul. He was such a softy. And so was my mother. But my mother was the nurse.
Gotcha.
A very stern, you know, Irish woman. And, you know, she ran the schedule.
I didn't know you were Italian and
Irish.
Never knew.
Yeah. And so, but I think that's where my foundation for liking male energy comes from.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think some people sometimes mistake the energy for different types of energy. For instance, like they'll get into a relationship and they think that there's a friendship that is, you know, blossoming. However, you know, somebody else may have a different intention or like a hidden agenda. And by and large, on average, women get into the relationship and they may just want friendship. However, men, whenever they get into the relationship, what they really want is something more. And that's just on average. So
I'm trying to remember this quote. Bear with me. Okay. So this was actually, my second husband used to say this all the time, that women underestimate a man's intentions and men overestimate a woman's intentions.
All the time.
Is that true?
He said
that it was.
Well, it's the truth. And that's one of the challenges of having a friendship or a platonic friendship with two heterosexual people who are both male and female. So what will happen is that you have to sometimes overcome an attraction. And whenever you have that attraction, when I say overcome an attraction, the woman gets into the relationship and they think, hey, you know what? This is just a platonic friendship. Mm-hmm. I want to benefit. I appreciate their energy. I enjoy having their perspective. However, men, we get into the relationship, and this is just on average, not all men. However, we get into the relationship and you know what? I want to have something a little more. Mm-hmm. I know I did whenever I met my wife. I was like, you know what? Yeah. I'm gonna become your friend. And
were extremely hot for her.
Is that the defining
thing? Like, does the person have to feel like the other person, you know, like if they're have do they have to be physically attracted to one another? Well, like have an they say that you know if you want to sleep with someone within 10 seconds after you meet them.
I would probably even say 5 seconds.
Five seconds?
So probably
5 seconds. Yep. Wow.
Come on, Bernadette. You've seen some guys
I've
and you're
three
like
to 5 seconds.
Yeah, 3 to 5 seconds is really all you need. You scan them up and down and you're like, yeah, I would be in the bed with them in a heartbeat. Or you're like, nah, that's not my kind.
No,
that's
I do have type. To say, both of my marriages, both of them, each one of them, I was attracted to them within a matter of seconds.
Oh,
probably the first time I saw them.
And sometimes there's this unconscious attraction that you get towards somebody. Why. Yeah, it's like you can't even explain it.
You can't even control it.
Yeah, so when I saw my wife the first time, I was like, you know what? I want to marry her. And that's what I did. So anyways, it took me a lot.
And now you're having a baby.
Yeah, I'm having a baby. So, you're right about it. So to answer your question, can there be platonic relationships between people? I would say that yes, there is. And most people would also agree with that. Like whenever you take a poll, there was a poll taken about 150 people. Most people, about 83% of them said, hey, you know what? Men and women can have platonic relationships. However, if you take the same poll of the same people, they will also say that did it lead to something more? And about 60% of them said, yes, it actually did. So whenever they get into these relationships, yes, it may start platonic. However, there is, and we've talked about this, the law of propinquity, which means that you love the one you're with. Whenever you go through something with someone, then sometimes that makes you closer. And if you're close to someone and you'll start to develop these small attractions, even if you had no attraction initially, then it's like, you know what? I didn't realize you were funny. I didn't realize you had this type of personality. I didn't realize that you were intelligent about this. I didn't realize you were, you were quirky like this. I didn't realize when the sun hits your eyes just like that, man, you look so beautiful. I'm so serious, you know, like,
but it's true.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, if you are with somebody for a long period of time, you sometimes will, and many times will, develop a sense of attraction towards them.
No, that is true, because I'm thinking of an old boyfriend of mine. He's passed away, and he was so funny. He was Robin Williams funny.
Really?
Yes. He was brilliant. And I met him when I worked at Family Court in New York State. He was an attorney, the new assistant. He was the assistant county attorney. He was right out of law school.
Assistant DA kind of deal?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right. And his name was Casey Clines, and he passed away, and he was 100% Irish, and he had beautiful blue eyes and silver hair, but I was not attracted to him at all.
Initially. Okay.
Like, at all. Yep. I was zero attraction to him.
Do you think he was attracted to you, or?
Yeah, I think so. All probably, right, looking back.
I mean, you're burnt a dick. Come on.
Well, and I was, I'm in my 20s, looking lovely at the front desk every day. Yeah. He probably was.
Oh, yeah.
But my point is, I was not attracted to him whatsoever.
Okay.
And he ended up being someone I fell deeply in love with.
Wow.
Like, very deeply in love with.
What made you fall in love with him? Can I ask you that?
His sense of humor.
He
was so funny. Like, so funny. I just couldn't get enough of him.
Yeah. So that is a question that I have for a lot of women, that what attracts you to men? Because, some women are strictly physical, and I get that. But by and large, a lot of times I tend to think that whenever a man can make a woman feel safe and secure, and they're funny, and like those things, those qualities that you don't always see up front, those things will attract you.
Well, Henny did make me feel safe.
Really?
Because my boyfriend before was physically abusive.
Yeah.
And this is a crazy story. They actually got into a fight over me 3 years after I moved out of town.
Tell
a bar fight about me. Isn't that the greatest thing a girl could have happen?
Yeah. Did Casey win? I want to know, did he win? Hopefully he did.
I'm sure he did.
Okay. All right.
He's Irish. Irish men know how to fight.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
Conor McGregor. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. This is fun conversation. Going back in time here with Von Eaglin. Oh, boy. Okay, everybody, stay tuned. More coming up with Von Eaglin. You're listening to One Life Radio. This song reminds me of the early days of One Life Radio. This song was popular back at, what year is this, 2011? 2020?
Sure.
Yeah, 2011.
I like
2010,
Maroon 5,
yeah. But welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. I want to let you know that you can go to our website, oneliferadio.com, to download and listen to our podcast or subscribe to our newsletter. You can listen to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Or you can go straight to iHeartMedia.com to listen live, or download the free iHeartRadio app and listen to us from anywhere in the world. A big shout out to our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior. In fact, Von Eaglin was the one that turned me on to Sun Warrior many, many years ago. You can get Sun Warrior at Vitamin Shoppe, or put it in your smoothie at Smoothie King. Sun Warrior is a premier all-natural raw superfood company dedicated to providing the best vegan plant-based plant-based protein powders and supplements. Go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all of their products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. And of course, Enviromedica, I love their products. You've had a great success with Enviromedica as well. You've told the story when you're on.
I was on Levaquin for about 30 days because I had something called prostatitis. I don't even know where it came from.
It's a strong antibiotic is what you were on.
Exactly. Yep. And then I had all these breakouts and different things happened to my skin and how my body was feeling, the sluggishness. I mean, all these different types of things that I was experiencing. However, when I got on Enviromedica, I mean, everything's just changed for me. So great product.
Yeah, it is. They have great products and they have this clay bath too. And I love their, I've been using their mineral salts for years. Minerals are super important. People forget about that, but they really are. And of course, Wild Foods, which was founded out of an obsession with finding the best ingredients in the world to support health and longevity. Their wild mission is to empower 50 million people with the knowledge that they can say no to big food, big pharma, bad science, and dangerous health and nutritional dogma. Check them out at wildfoods.com. When we were talking with Dr. Avery, I was actually thinking about all the great companies that support One Life Radio, including Wild Foods Company, because it is important that you eat well so you don't suffer from, mental stress or physical stress, all these things. So eat well, think well, and be well. No evil food, small batch vegan plant-based meats, and of course, crazy water. Call me crazy. I probably am. I don't mind. But I drink crazy water all the time. And of course, Veg World magazine, you can get digital. You can get it in digital form. It's a vegan lifestyle magazine. Check them out at Veg World magazine or vegworldmag.com. And of course, Paleo magazine. I have the latest issue here right now. It's incredible. It really, really is. Especially if you're a woman, you need to go out and get a copy of this. I got mine at Central Market, or I would subscribe because that's the best way to get it. They really, just like the Well-Being Journal, are very, very particular and do their research about what they put out there. And so check them both out. Thorn Research as well. We have high standards and so do they. Shop our Thorn dispensary for 20% off and free shipping on every order. You can find our dispensary at oneliferadio.com and of course the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Sean Wells is a fellow and Dr. Joey was on the show. Dr. Joey Antonio for so many years and a lot of a very good scientists, a group of scientists that are really out there always trying to find how to make us bigger, better, and stronger, right? But speaking of bigger, better, and stronger, Von Eaglin is in studio today. He is an amazing guy. He's been on the show for years, and we're talking about can men and women just be friends? Von Eaglin is a licensed professional counselor supervisor and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. You can find him at PrestonPlaceCounseling.com or follow him on Instagram at Von Talks. So many people love you, Von. You and Dewan, and you're both at the same practice. And you help a lot of people. You do.
Well, we do our best to. You know, that's one of the goals is always to try to help people, and that's why I got into this profession. So
Well, let's help people figure out can men and women just be friends? I say absolutely they can.
You say absolutely?
Absolutely.
You know,
yes.
There are some people that probably disagree with you. I'll say this, and this is the typical counseling answer, which is, you know what? It depends. Because the thing about it is that have you heard of the DTR before, like the defining the relationship talk?
Uh-uh.
And so DTR, which is acronym. So define the relationship talk. I think people have to be willing to have that kind of talk and figure out what do boundaries look like, because boundaries, I do believe, look different for different people.
Yeah.
And if something happens in a relationship, because sometimes one person gets into the relationship with boundaries. However, the other person gets into the relationship with possibilities. You know, so I'm thinking like what could potentially happen, you know, if I get close to this person. So and I'm always seeking like, hey, you know what? If they give me an opportunity, I'm going to take it.
OK.
And if something does happen in a relationship, you have to be willing to pivot and say, you know, I'm going to go a different direction and we need to go back in and define the relationship as well. So
should you do the DTR analysis every time you're dating someone?
Well, I would say yes, you know.
And what's the T for?
Define the relationship.
Oh, the.
Defining the relationship.
Yeah, okay.
So you got to define.
And not Facebook official.
So I totally believe that, again, whenever you define the relationship, you have to have a clear understanding about why are we in this relationship. Is it just for friendship or are we looking at the relationship as something more? Because I tend to believe that the best relationships are ones where there's intentionality. You know, we're going to be mm-hmm. intentionally friends or we're going to be intentionally lovers or that we're going to see what happens. But when there's this nebulous kind of gray area, like we're not sure, that's when I tend to see that boundary sometimes come down. Let's say I have a friend and it's a female friend of mine. We're studying late at night. We're in the same finance class. And as I'm going through college, you know, we start to have certain boundaries come down. You know what? We say a little joke here. Oh, she laughed at that. Oh, and then I used a little sexual innuendo. And then all of a sudden she laughed at that. And then when the door opens, and I may take that opportunity, you know, and that's not necessarily a good thing, because, and if I do happen to take that opportunity, then we need to go back in and again, have this discussion about, okay, where do we stand? Or do we want to maintain this friendship, or do we not want to be friends? Or, you know, like, what does that look like moving forward?
Yeah. And there's so many people bring so many insecurities into a relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's very problematic as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the biggest problems you could bring into a relationship.
Well, I think insecurities, or I mean, everyone has insecurities.
Yeah.
I have insecurities.
I do too.
You know, so everyone has insecurities. I don't necessarily know if insecurities are the biggest issue in a relationship. I think it's more important that you're accepted for your insecurities, and that, you know what, if you bring that insecurity into the relationship, that you guys talk about it, you have someone who's safe, who you can be vulnerable with, and you can talk about what your insecurities are, and then that person accepts you for who you are, and they don't try to change you or use your insecurity against you. And I've seen that happen sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're like, you know what, you told me your insecurity, and then I go back in and I weaponize that same insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say my past, like, okay, I had sex with all these women, and then all of a sudden, you know, in an argument, then you say, well, you know what, you were a hoe in the past because blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm just like, how? Like, I'm trying to change over here, you know? So, you know, like, you should never weaponize someone's insecurity, because, I mean, that is an extreme sense of, like, that can be betrayal to some people.
Oh, it is betrayal. I think it is betrayal.
Yeah, so, you know.
That's the worst thing you can do, is get personal information about somebody and then use it against them to hurt them. It's the deepest hurt ever.
It definitely is. It definitely is. And so, and as we're talking about, like, can men and women be friends, there are some truths about friendships.
Give them to us.
Well, I would say that one of the biggest truths is that, you know what, maintaining a relationship, a cross-sex relationship over time can sometimes be difficult, because, you know, friendship should change over time. And the thing that I needed in a friend when I was younger, may no longer need that thing nowadays. Because, you know, when I was a teenager, I needed a friend that was going to, hey, help me turn up in the club. You know, that's what I need. I need somebody who's going to, you know, like, go out with me, you know, maybe get high, something like that. You know, I want to go out and enjoy myself, seek some pleasure. But at this point in my life, I don't need that. I need someone who's stable. I need someone who I can talk to about my feelings, what I'm going through, some of the stresses that I have. If we're in similar life positions. We may make similar salaries, but I need friendships that will develop over time. Not all friendships you can really take with you. And when we're talking about cross-sex relationships and platonic relationships, as things change over time, let's say I had a good friend in college, but now I'm married, we may not be able to have the same intimate conversations because my wife may not be comfortable with that, you know? And so, like, again, so maintaining, like, cross-sex relationships over time sometimes become difficult. And even the older you get, you'll see that people are less likely to establish new friendships.
Yeah.
Elderly people, like, less than 2% of them establish new friendships. And then cross-sex relationships or friendships sometimes may even be more difficult. So that's one of the things that you see. Another truth would be that men many times benefit from cross-sex relationships, sometimes even more than women, because when men are in these relationships, because when men are in relationships, I like to say, and Gottman talks about this, that we have relationships that are shoulder-to-shoulder, whereas women have relationships that are face-to-face. So because whenever men have relationships, a lot of times we're doing things together. And our goal many times is to always keep the game going. So we're always trying to keep the game going anytime. So let's say there's a conflict. Well, let's get through the conflict really quickly, because men typically are more sensitive to conflict in relationships. And then we want to get the conflict done, over with, and then let's keep the game going. Whatever the game of life, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever men and women have these cross-sex relationships, women many times are helping men to learn how to become more empathic, not just keep the game going, but they would have them take time to, one, become more introspective, and then, two, have some realizations and some epiphanies about, like, what life is and you know, and what it means to have deep, intimate relationships with authenticity. Because a lot of times, guys, we don't always take the time to have these authentic relationships, because we're always trying to do instead of just actually learning how to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you're always trying to get laid.
That's part of being, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's be in this bed together.
Did I just say that? Oh, my God. Who was that?
I want to be on your neck right now. I want to be, you know, snuggled up by your,
oh,
you
my
know,
God.
Whatever.
But that's so true, right?
Yeah.
That's an unspoken truth.
Yeah. You know, I mean, guys, part of our DNA, I don't say our DNA, a lot of guys, we like sex. So, I mean, not that women don't, but just by and large, you guys.
Yeah. What's up with that?
Yeah. We're going to have to do another sex talk at some point.
Yeah. We got to talk about that. Yeah, because I do think that I don't know. Maybe it's just because women bear children and they have just, I don't know. We can talk about it. We don't have time now.
The stigmas of sex.
The stigma. Yeah. But I love this conversation. I had so much fun today. Everyone, I hope you enjoyed it. I always enjoy doing the show. And you know what? Like, really take care of yourself. I learned a lot of lessons over the last couple of days. Don't let that stress get to you. Do some self-care. Do what you've got to do to be healthier, because you get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and be contagiously positive.